If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Now, here's Ira.
The Sound Podcast is part of the OSIRIS Network. OSIRIS connects you with podcasts, videos, and live experiences about the artists and topics you love. Visit OSIRISPod.com to check out our shows. In fact, you should check out No Simple Road or Inside Out with Turner and Seth. Both are great shows. OSIRIS works in partnership with Jambase, which connects music fans with the music they love and empowers them to go see live music. For more, check them out at jambase.com. The show starts now.
While we worry, tell me. While we cry and tell me. Can we live together without pain? Burdens at our doorstep, burdens in our heart. It's time to let them travel, lay them down. From the tallest mountain, down in the lowest valley, we're all asking and we want to know. While we're climbing, tell me. While we're falling, tell me. Where we're going, yeah, we want to know.
Listening to Rise Sun, the title song from the infamous String Dusters' latest release. While the band has been touring nonstop, as most bands in the community do, they haven't been resting on their laurels. The band received a Grammy Award for their 2017 release, Laws of Gravity, and they continue to make great bluegrass music both live and in the studio. When we sat down with Andy Falco and Chris Pandolfi on the day of the release last week, we had lots to talk about. The conversation started, though, when I asked about the 2 years since Laws of Gravity and if that time away gave the band an even better opportunity to make a new record.
That's a question I feel like I've gotten a lot, and it's a great one, obviously, because the whole Grammy thing can, it signifies a lot of different things. But for me, I feel like more than anything, it's just been empowering, you know, to win the Grammy for Best Bluegrass Album for an album where we wrote all the songs and produced it ourselves along with Billy Hume. To me, that was really freeing and sent us into this new album. With a lot of confidence about what we were doing and, you know, the validation of having won for something, like I said, that was so original was strong. And so, we already did that. We won the Grammy. So if we win another one, great. But in the meantime, hopefully I feel like the other guys would agree that for the most part, it's set us free just to be ourselves even more and chase that original sound, songwriting, arranging, all the different aspects of it, and just go deeper on sort of our own mission to make our own music.
Did you want to add anything to that? No?
No, I mean, I think he's spot on, and it's just, you know, I think, you know, we write, all five of us, all year round, and I think just, you know, in general, we've evolved so much as a band, especially in probably like the last 6 years, you know, just as songwriters and as arrangers and as producers, and also our process in recording has sort of refined itself. And so, you know, just like Chris said, I mean, you know, we went in with the confidence and feeling sort of validated in a way that gives you that extra boost of confidence. And so going in, we just felt really good about, the songs, and we were able to come together as one unit.
It's so weird to hear that Billy Hume produced this record and has produced past records, and I get it. He's not just a hip hop guy, but you know that's how a lot of people know him, and that's where he has made his mark in a good way. Is that weird that you're working with him and that he's been able to get this stuff out of you?
He actually has a folk background, actually. I don't think a lot of people realize that. But, yeah, I mean, as far as having somebody who's able to find, you know, to be able to work with such, a big sonic space as hip-hop, you know, and be able to transfer a lot of that, I think, to our sound is key because of, how we perceive our sounds, on the live show. You know, we've always kind of struggled with trying to have that translate into a album, I think, as a lot of bands do, you know. So he was, I think, able to just bring in that same sort of, you know, our energy, and he knows how to do that. And I think a lot of that comes from that same sort of style, you know.
Yeah, and I would also add, you know, you got to remember that there's a bigger theme to our music and our career and the place that we've taken up in the bluegrass world, and basically, you know, a theme of sort of cutting our own path, of taking the parts of bluegrass and our collective influences that we really feel like amount to a strong musical statement, and combining them with all this originality. And to me, Billy's a big step in that direction. You know, he's not the typical engineer for our world, and we've already got so much of that acoustic thing by virtue of the instruments that we play and the songs that we write, that creating something different sonically is just one more extension of the originality factor that I feel like is so critical to us as a band and us as people. So Billy's been a big help in really making that happen.
And I'm going to touch on Laws of Gravity just one more time in terms of it being a bit of a, not a concept record, but there is a story that flows through the entire record. And I think it's very different in Rise Sun in that these are individual songs that obviously have their own, that's cool, what's ever going on in the background, have their own themes,
but aren't necessarily linked together like laws of gravity. Was that purposeful again when you set to write out, put together a new record?
Well, that came, I think a lot. Go ahead, Sandra, you start.
I was just going to say, you know, to me there is a solid theme on the new record, and I think that it's hard to say how much that translates externally, just because we're so in touch with the journey that we're on as people and as a group, and you know, as we grow together, and that really makes for a lot of cohesion in the writing, the themes, the things that we're thinking about in our lives. There's a lot of crossover there just because we're, you know, undertaking a lot of that growth as a group. And so, but you know, the truth is there's not a ton of super strong intention around a common theme with the songs before we go into the pre-production sessions. Now, there are ways that things are tweaked and things evolve in a certain way. And to me, the new record really represents, you know, there's a common theme of hope, you know, of positivity, of trying to come together and experience, you know, sort of love on a more macro scale, coming together as people to try and just do better and realize that, you know, you do have a ton of potential. And as long as we keep that belief alive, that's sort of the most critical first step to, you know, a process of hopefully making the world a better place. And we're just trying to play some part in that process through the creation of our music. To me, that's the real theme of the new record. Would you agree with that, Falco?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And you know, I think, you know, it is like, you know, we're all sort of feeling the same things. I think people are feeling the same things that we are. I mean, it's a crazy time we're living now, you know? And I think that's where a lot of that comes from. But I think also, you know, I think a big part of the probably, you know, what you're hearing in that sort of cohesion is also a product of having recorded, you know, sequenced the album before we even went into the studio, and then recording the album in order, you know, was a big part of that, a piece to that puzzle of that cohesion, I think, because we were able to, you know, live the record in real time almost, you know, and feel everything on the record as it was happening in order. So, you know, it's a really sort of interesting, and I think it was a surprise, don't you think, Panda? Like, I wasn't expecting to have it recorded in order. I thought it was like, yeah, that'd be a fun thing to do, but I didn't really expect it to really change the whole, you know.
Yeah,
it helped, you know, a lot.
Yeah, we sort of stumbled upon that process-wise, and we knew we wanted to do something, and this word gets tossed around a lot, but conceptual, something that tied this record to our show more, and that was a lot of that transitional stuff. And we looked at the record almost sequence-wise like a show, and, you know, you can't go into a show without knowing the order of songs that you're going to play. I mean, it depends, some bands do, but for us, you know, we go into the show with an idea of, you know, the songs are laid out, but then this idea of creating transitions on the fly that are hopefully going to help to meld these ideas together musically, and also, you know, I think lyrically, content-wise, arranging, it starts to create a cohesion between all these different songs and all these different themes. So we sequenced everything beforehand. We knew how it was going to go. And that's what Andy's referring to in terms of, you know, sort of being inside the record as it went down. And that created something really cool, because there is a bigger ebb and flow to every show. And likewise, I think there's a big ebb and flow to this record, all the transitions, and sort of one song leaves you off in one place and then goes through this transitional thing and then takes you to another place. And that's, you know, that's how shows go, that's how this record goes, and, you know, that's kind of how life goes. There's a flow to all of it, and we tried to bring that out on this record as much as possible, and that was a cool way that helped us, I think, make that happen.
Yeah, I mean, even in the energy of you know, everybody's, you know, the first song, Rise Sun, is has this first day of the studio energy, you know, as in contrast, like the last track, Truth and Love, has a little bit of this, you know, we've been on this journey kind of energy to it, and it has, you know, and it's and through the whole record, it sort of, you know, comes up and down. So that was a really awesome little surprise, you know, by doing the record in that way.
It's interesting that you mentioned the cohesion piece, only because, you know, there are some co-writes on this record, and yet it feels like a Dusters record. And maybe that's because of the sequencing. Maybe that's because how tight you guys are after all these years as a band. Maybe it is the vocal presentation and the harmonies. But it does feel like it's a Dusters record, and that it's a extremely cohesive Dusters record. I can't put my finger on it, but now that we're talking about, you know, the sequencing of the songs and stuff, it really does feel like maybe your seminal record to this point of putting all of that stuff that is the Dusters experience into one small container.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, I would have been that.
And
thank you.
I think that there's a key piece in the process that to me really creates a lot of that cohesion. And that's the way that we do pre-production as a band, and sort of the overriding process that we've evolved over the last few records. Each one takes on its own life, new songs, this most current one, Rise Sun, with the sequencing, et cetera. But there's something that we've done that we've been honing over the last few records that in the pre-production sessions where, you know, it starts with the songwriting and then we move to this arranging process. And that's when, you know, and it's almost like an extension of the writing, even though we might not necessarily be writing, you know, the real guts of the song, the hook, the words, that stuff might already be done. But in that next phase of taking our instruments and all the things that we've learned how to do on our instruments as a band, as individuals, and crafting parts that really bring these songs to life, to me, that's such a huge part of what makes them kind of quintessentially String Duster. And as that process evolves over the arc of the last handful of records, I think we just are getting a lot better at that, and taking a song that could feel like it's in one genre and then everything sort of gravitates a little bit toward the center, that becomes in a way kind of quintessentially String Duster. And so much of that happens through the arranging process.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I had a conversation recently with Dave from Yonder about cover songs and about figuring out how to arrange cover songs so that, you know, fiddle and so that banjo and guitar aren't juxtapositioned beside each other all the time, and that, you know, there is some thought given to where instruments are because of the way a few instruments sound like each other. And so that's a big part of figuring out your sound too, obviously. And so how often do those conversations happen where Chris says, no, this is the way we're going to do it. We need this here. Or Andy says, well, but the dobro, you know, shouldn't be too close to the banjo or to Jeremy's part. Like, do those conversations take place, or like what happens in those sessions where you're mapping things out?
I think, you know, we do have a sort of, with our band, it comes actually somewhat, you know, naturally, where there is like a certain roles that rhythmically are, you know, get filled, you know. But then, you know, we track everything live and we make it fit, you know, in our pre-production rhythmically and harmonically. But when we get to the studio, we track everything live as a band. And then we spend some time with other. We like to use the studio as an instrument as well. We're not afraid to add other subtle sonic elements you know, to bring the songs to life, you know, that sometimes that thing,
I was just going to say, yeah, that thing, Ira, that you just mentioned is definitely, this idea of figuring out what the roles are. That's a great sort of, you know, observation, and at the center of sort of this modern string band thing, as bands like the Dusters and all of our related bands take bluegrass and start to do new things with it, there is sort of a common thread of no drums. And drums is typically the thing that really carries the rhythm section. And the one thing is consistent across a lot of these newer bluegrass bands in our world is we have to sort of split up those different rhythm responsibilities. And, you know, we do check it out and make sure that there's not, you know, redundant parts, and try and make the music as convincing and powerful as we can. And that's that thing of all finding different roles. And we'll definitely look inside and try and sort of divvy things up a little bit and make sure that, like I say, there's not, you know, two people playing the same part. But those things have also come a lot more naturally over time. That, you know, we play 100 shows a year, and every night we're on stage for 2.5 hours trying to sort of hone that equation in, so that by the time we go to do the record, a lot of that stuff is pretty natural through the arrangement process and through the recording process. And like Andy says, when it's time to hit record, you know, we really want to play live. We want to capitalize on the experience that we have accrued playing as a group. And that's the thing for us, that tightness, that vibe around our sound. So we sort of set it all up so that we can set ourselves free once we hit record, and really just be in the music like we are at the live show, and sort of see where it takes us.
Yeah, and there's a lot of different, you know, with our band, you know, we don't have one lead singer. We don't have like one main soloist, you know, we don't have one main songwriter. It's truly, and we've heard it a lot from engineers and producers and over the years of people that we worked with, we truly are like a fully, you know, five piece democratic, you know, band. And sometimes like producers will say, you know, people always claim that, but that's not really like, we truly are, you know, all for one and one for all. And so we try to sort of exploit every single, you know, part of our, every piece of our sound, you know.
The plan is obviously to tour the bleep out of this record. You're on tour right now with a ton of festivals. I mean, I you know, you guys tour constantly. You're always on the road. And so knowing these songs and having your fans know these songs, well, you've been playing some of them before the record even came out, and you've, I guess, been road testing some of them. Is that important for you guys to sort of get a reaction to some of these songs before you go into the studio and put them down?
We don't play them before we go to the, we don't actually play them until they're released, except this week we started, you know, but we only played the singles as they were released. We released three singles over the last several months. And so once the single was released, we would put it on the show. But so it actually is a very amazing feeling to play these songs for the first time in front of people this week, because that is the first time where we're able to see. It's like, you know, being a cook in the kitchen, you know, and then she's serving your meal that you made up, and actually being able to see the reaction for the first time is really a unique and a beautiful experience, you know.
Did you guys?
And scary.
Yeah, I'm sure. Did you guys purposely put Travis at front and center on the record to attract sort of the boy band audience?
I'll give you one guess whose idea that was.
I thought
Travis
wishes
to be a boy band front man.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of cool that you enlisted JT, Justin Timberlake, kind of to be on the front of the record.
He would love to hear that.
Let him know that you said that.
Uh, obviously these songs will get played out in terms of their length, even though you guys are, you know, a bluegrass band, but there are songs and there are places where the jams can happen. I'm thinking about the jam in Cloud Valley specifically. I think it's probably my favorite kind of jam on the record because it does feel like I'm actually there at a show watching it live. But I would imagine that all of these songs will come to life in a much bigger way live than they necessarily do on the record, right?
Yeah, that's definitely the hope. I mean, we live and breathe by the live show. That's what we do. You know, I play 100 shows a year, but we really only release a record once every 2 years. So ultimately, everything finds a place in the live show, and that's what it's all about. But the record making process is so sacred and awesome. I mean, that's the time when we come together as people and really evolve our art. Like Andy was saying, we don't really road test the song. So when a new album drops, we've been doing this for the last few, it's this big step forward for the show. And for an audience like ours, it's like, all right, well, we got to get out now and see the show again and see these new songs and see this thing stepped up and different. And that's that next piece of taking all this stuff and, you know, really tailoring it for the live show, adding in sections or extending sections that will make it more compelling live, transitioning into and out of those songs. And now as the album is coming out, we're actually going to be experimenting a bunch with that stuff, you know, these next couple of nights and then, you know, on into the summer months. But yeah, everything will take on sort of a new life as it gets introduced into the live show, but it's that album making process, like I say, that really evolves the art and gives us a chance to figure out what's the next step in the String Dusters sound and the String Dusters experience.
Those jams on the album are live improvised jams as well. I mean, you know, so there is, and just like any live improvised, just like on the show, you know, a jam is different night to night, you know, so that was, those were those jams that day.
Amazing. Yeah. Keeping it relevant to the touring and what's going on right now, I did notice in a set a couple nights ago, there was a Terrapin tease, and I'm wondering if you guys are gearing up for something special or crazy or out of this world for the Red Rocks trip and being on stage with Phil. Andy, we've talked about your Grateful Dead Deadhead past. We haven't talked to Chris about it, but I would imagine some of that is present as well. Are you already planning for Red Rocks? And is that Terrapin tease something that we should think about at all? or am I just crazy?
We've done the full Terrapin like twice, right? Is that what we did?
Yeah.
Two times?
Yeah,
maybe?
But I will say that we've got you right where we want you, Ira. You're hearing the Terrapin tease and hoping. So, mission accomplished. That's just one of the awesome things about being in the musical world that we are, just so much cross-pollination between and bands and genres and, you know, different ways of doing things. Huge influence from bands like the Grateful Dead. And now we get to play with Phil Lesh at Red Rocks. It's just a complete dream come true. So yeah, we're always open to those sorts of things. It's amazing how that Grateful Dead songbook has just permeated our whole world. And, you know, we've played with Phil a bunch of times, you know, Phil and Friends, Grateful Grass with Keller. It seems like we know all that stuff and we've played all of it at one point. So nothing's off the table. We're super excited for the Red Rocks show, but you know, that's sort of the underlying theme of the String Dusters experiences. You just never know what you're going to get. You gotta come out and check out the show to see what the latest and greatest is.
Fair enough. Well, you know, if you guys don't do well in May at Red Rocks, maybe you won't be invited to Terrapin Crossroads in July. So I'm just putting that out there. thanks so much, guys. I really appreciate the access to both of you and to the rest of the band. You know, it feels like I just talked about the Telluride live release yesterday, but it wasn't. It was, when I look back on the calendar, it was quite a while ago. And thanks for the music and for everything that you guys do. And really appreciate you taking the time today to talk about Rise Sun. It really is, I think, to date, your best record. So congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Always good to talk to you, Ira.
Rise Sun is a terrific record and one we were so psyched to have both Andy and Chris on the show together to talk about. We appreciate the hard work that went into this record, from writing, playing, planning, and yes, even sequencing, apparently. It all comes together in a really cool package, one we think you'll enjoy. The Dusters will continue to play tons of dates through the spring and definitely through festival season this summer. For more, visit thestringdusters.com. Before we leave you, let's listen to the last track of the record, the synopsis of the record, and indeed, the process. Here is Truth and Love.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. inspired by the music we love. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. The Sound Podcast is part of the Osiris Network. For more, visit OsirisPod.com. Thanks for listening. Osiris.